Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 18th of January, recording at 9:23 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick review of the week. Global stock markets. Well, it was weak bordering on a bloodbath here for some of them. Not a great deal of respite on Wall Street, which managed to close down, not substantially, but it had had a reasonable rally underway early on in the day, and before closing down half a percentage point or so on the Dow and the S&P, the NASDAQ less so. And Asian markets held out better for the most part, and we saw some very good closes in Asia today, for instance. But the big story on the week, it was the Wall Street leash effect, and that was pulling everything downwards. Now, we also saw cracks in some of the real holdouts, the stalwart holdouts. They include Brazil, India, Indonesia, and also Malaysia. So that's gone full circle, which tells us whether there are no holdouts here among the important markets, and that tells us something about where we are in the cycle. More on that in a moment. Government bonds were pretty firm overall, although a quiet day in here today. But hardly surprising that government bond prices remained firm against the background of that generally weak equity performance. And in currencies, the dollar steadied up a bit here. Some of the favored resources currencies, such as the aid dollar and the New Zealand dollar, and the Canadian to somewhat of a lesser extent, weakened. In here, we saw an early rally by the euro, but then had it give up some ground. The US dollar was a little bit steadier in here, but very much range bound. Precious metals, they've been in what I think is a consolidation phase, quite volatile, and had a good rally yesterday and couldn't hold it. Closed out on the lows, which is where Asia entered the fray today. But then they bounced back quite strongly. And, you know, we've got silver in the after-hours trading here at 16.25 and a half on the March contract. It's a gain of 24 and a half here on the day. Gold bullion, 883. It had been as low as 870 in the Asian trading. It had also been $5.50 higher at 888. But not too bad a performance there. Platinum's been just about the quietest. Down a couple of dollars in here today, but well off the lows. And industrial metals were mostly firmer in here. They were all firmer in here today. They were quiet on the week, but more gains than losses, I believe. And the grains and bean complex roared into the week and then pausing here, maybe a little bit overstretched. And some of the other soft commodities have roared up recently. Sugar has been a notable big gainer this week. So has sugar, white sugar, which is the London traded and also the U.S. sugar contract. And what else to mention? I think that's where crude oil is just above the $90 level, 90.62. It's been hovering near that $90 level this week. Okay, so what's going on here, and where are we going with all this? Well, pretty nervous times here for equity investors. Needless to say, the U.S. economy remains the epicenter for global risk, the focal point of the main concerns, and the guessing game for investors generally is just how much contagion is there going to be. And it's not too hard to work that out. If Wall Street keeps plummeting, then the leash effect is very much in effect and dragging these markets down. And Wall Street, again, the banks are at the center of all this, and Wall Street keeps coming up with new things to worry about, not surprisingly, the latest being the credit default swaps. So a little headline here, Wall Street's next hole, credit default swaps threaten banks. And that's a front page article in the Wall Street Journal. I'll post that today, probably as my lead item. It's instructive. If anybody in the future ever tries to persuade you to buy a complex financial instrument, my guess, how can I guess this, that you might be a wee bit hesitant to do so. I mean, when you read about this Sargasso, I mean, the mind boggles, and the main thing is that just people don't know what's going on. They don't know who the counterparties are, so this is going to be a problem. It's going to linger for quite some time, and that's why, even though the banks are quite depressed, they're going to require a long convalescence phase. Now, one doesn't want to be too gloomy here, and it's very easy to do that, and some people are either enjoying or traumatizing themselves with a degree of moderate hysteria. And let's look at it this way. The banks have made a huge mess. It's created enormous problems for their balance sheets. They will have to be bailed out through giving sovereign wealth funds preferential deals, rights issues, government pitching in with recapitalizing through the yield curve. This type of action. At the end of the day, banks are an unsentimental lot, except when it comes to the big boss's own individual paycheck, and they will certainly look after themselves. And then, as we have seen, and not a pretty spectacle overall. And at the end of the day, though, what's going to happen is, not being a sentimental lot about colleagues, there are going to be huge layoffs within the banking sector, and that will cause a few more problems for the U.S. economy. But the banks will get lean and mean fairly early. The earnings side, it's difficult to see. Well, let's put it this way. There is absolutely no way they can possibly return rapidly to the profit levels that they enjoyed in 2006. That was all based on the shams and scams that we're seeing revealed, that we have seen revealed here in recent months, and will continue to see going forward. And my goodness, it'll be an amazing story, and there'll be lots of books written about it, and there will also be films. I think I'll skip the books, having followed it in real time, but the movies will certainly be good value. And in Hollywood, generally, bankers will be the bad guys. You know, sometimes it's the Russians, it's been the Arabs, it's been the French, it's been the British. Well, you know who it's going to be now. It's going to be the bankers if you want genuine bad guys. Well, get back to the long-term themes here. What we will have, though, is banks will become leaner. they will become meaner in the sense of better regulated, and they'll get back probably to some proper old-fashioned banking. In other words, we can kiss goodbye to the 120% mortgages, hopefully the teaser incentives, and they'll get back to banking the old-fashioned way, which, wasn't a bad business overall. And it just, we're not going to see, I think, these mountains of new financial structures with so-called rocket scientists being paid large fees, not to mention the large fees of the people who marketed all these things. Does anyone think these instruments would have existed if there hadn't been somebody earning a nice turn? Well, we're talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people earning a nice turn and again persuading somebody to buy these various different products. But there we go. So that's what we're going to see, a long period, I think, of modest performance by the U.S. economy, in which the banks, as I say, go through a long convalescence. The domestic economy is really quite soft. The bright spots will be the international companies in the USA, which will benefit from a soft dollar. The idea that the dollar is somehow going to rise like the phoenix against this background strikes me as bizarre, especially as interest rates are going to come down a whole lot further. But those U.S. multinational companies, which I've said all along were the only area that didn't look scary in the U.S., they should continue to do pretty well. And I don't see the global recession occurring. But going back to interest rates, I think certainly the Feds play it by the book, working by the calendar, or whatever, working by committee, producing camels, has certainly increased the risk to not only the U.S. economy, but we've seen the consequences in the U.S. stock market as well. And I think it's a bit pathetic because you get a situation where confidence has obviously deteriorated significantly, while there are obviously big risks to the downside in the U.S. economy. And does anybody seriously think that the U.S. economy is going to rebound rapidly from all this? Well, what have they asked them what they've been inhaling or what they're inhaling? Now, yet Bernanke announces all this, tells people what they know or confirms their worst fears and saying that the economy is not doing well, and then hints that, oh, well, maybe instead of the piecemeal 25 basis points rate cut that on the 30th or 31st of this month, whenever they do it, that we might get a 50 basis point cut. And some people are even saying, well, a little bigger. Well, I think they'll probably go 50, but my goodness, predicting this lot, other than the fact that they're going to dither and going to remain behind the curve of events, predicting anything other than that is fairly difficult. If you're going to cut those rates and the market is weak, and that investors are traumatized and that has a knock-on effect in terms of consumer and business spending, why not bring the rate cuts forward? Does that indicate panic? Well, not if it's presented sensibly, but well, they haven't done that. So we're left with a stock market here that is still probing for a low, and we need to look for various different indicators that will indicate that it has reached a low. We're beginning to get a little bit of blood on the streets, so this is no time to panic in markets that have taken the big hits from the U.S. to Japan. We have seen a persistent decline, which has created a very clear short-term oversold condition. We have seen some climactic selling, but it's not a really dramatic climactic sell-off. Will we get that? Well, It's certainly possible, but I think we probably get a little bit of a technical rebound in here first. Given the right measures coming from the Fed, coming from the stability, beg your pardon, the stimulus package from the White House and Congress, we could get quite a good bounce overall. But among the indicators to but I don't think we'll get that in the very short term. Among the indicators to watch are the VIX index. That got up to 29.30 today and then eased off a couple of points. Now, it's VIX in the 30 region and above is getting very interesting. And that tends to, well, the August low, for instance, when we had that climactic selling and ending in a free fall couple of days, that pushed the VIX up to over 37. There are times back in the big bear market and that we saw from 2000 into well into 2001, we saw that VIX occasionally get up, I believe, over 50. So these tend to be in the form of a spike, and it'll all happen in a 2 or 3 days, shoot up and then come back down. But I'll put it this way: we have seen some summarize some capitulation selling, some blood in the streets, but not enough proactive measures from the Fed and the government in terms of a stimulus package to really shore up confidence here overall. So we're still left with that leash effect overall, but you see what happens here. A number of these Asian markets started weak, and then a lot of them closed firmer. Japan, interestingly, put in some quite good bold upside key day reversals on the Nikkei and also on the TOPIX index. And my view overall is that we're going to see turbulent conditions until we get Wall Street, or till the slide on Wall Street is stemmed. So the leash effect is still fairly negative here, but a number of markets are coming back to interesting levels. I bought a little bit of MLW. Not so, beg your pardon. I bought a little bit of MLW today. I bought a bit of Rio yesterday. MLW is the Merrill Lynch World Mining Trust. I've pointed out that the some of the good China funds, the Atlantis China Fortune Fund, that's come back, and I have said all along that these things are best purchased on real following real setbacks. And that's the sort of thing that we're beginning to see. Looking ahead, I do feel that the fuller money themes, and that's largely Asian-led growth, and it's the resources markets, and there's been a rotation there from the industrial resources to the soft commodities. And the soft commodities are a little overextended here, but very much in the short term, but very much a bull market. And I think that the industrial commodities will be picking up the depressed metals, that is, well, relatively depressed relative to their highs, metals such as zinc and nickel. And copper has already had quite a good bounce, and I think we'll see these ranging higher during most of the rest of the year, as that whole global infrastructure story. And there's even a building boom in New York City, and okay, the housing sector is in a big slump, but there are huge infrastructure projects all over the globe, and not just China and India. You've got the Middle East, you've got Russia, you've got the bigger economies in South America, such as Brazil, Argentina. So this is a story, as I've said before, that's going to run and run and run, and I want to be invested there. That doesn't mean that investments in those areas don't suffer from the Wall Street leash effect. Of course they do, but some of them come down less. A few of them that are regarded as a high beta or highly cyclical will come down a little bit more. But that creates the buying opportunities, and they usually bounce back up much, much more quickly. And I will be very surprised and very disappointed if I don't see a number of new highs in that. In the my top 10 long-term investment portfolio as the year progresses. I've seen a few of them in, I think notably in the gold shares, that Merrill Lynch Golden General Fund, and then of course the JP Morgan India Fund. Both those are off their highs, but remain outstanding long-term investments, as does as do, I think, all of the Fuller Money themes. What about these government bonds? If I'd understood the actual degree of carnage that was going to result as a consequence of all this banking policy, I think I would have been much more alert in those bonds. So that was an opportunity missed in terms of the recoveries there. Certainly we don't have an inflation problem while bond yields are as government bond yields are as low as they are today. And if we get more capitulation selling from Wall Street, and there's a fair risk that that does happen, or if it doesn't happen, that we get some turbulent action within a mostly ranging period for a while longer, that's going to keep bond prices firm, and also to keep, and of course, therefore keeping yields down. When people look beyond this U.S. economic weakness and say, you know, I think the economy has bottomed and is recovering, and as those fears of recession and deflationary pressures created by weak housing, rising unemployment, weak consumer spending, when those deflationary fears subside, then we're going to see some significant weakness in these long-dated government bond markets. For a taste of that, we're seeing it late last year when the Australian government bond prices were very weak, got down to their lowest levels, I think, in quite a few years, and in other words, the yields pushing up. Those yields have subsequently come down somewhat as the global growth fears have spread, but I would expect major weakness in a number of these bond markets when the global growth story, or the story of global growth picking up once again, is next seen and accepted. Now, that's not going to be in the short term. Could it be in the second half of the year? Possibly. We'll have to see. But meanwhile, we're still in this somewhat murky, choppy, nervous area, which is going to persist for a while longer, I suspect. So that will support bond prices, and it will probably confine upside in stock markets to technical rallies. And the markets that have the big Type 3 tops overhanging will be vulnerable to further Wall Street related contagion. And we've seen a number of indices, increasing number of indices, take out their August lows, And needless to say, those indices would have to rally strongly back up above those levels to offset the risk of some further weakness on the downside. Now, that weakness, I do not think is something that is going to persist throughout the year, but I do think it may be with us, or certainly limiting upside, and probably giving us some additional declines where you see those big overhanging type 3 top formations for at least a few more weeks and quite possibly a few more months. Now, currencies. I mentioned earlier on that I just did not see how the US dollar was going to rise like the phoenix against the background of economic weak US economic weakness and low interest rates. I can see or low and moving lower US interest rates. I can see people covering shorts in the dollar, and there are still some dollar shorts out there. So I can see the technical rallies. I've said that I thought we would see a fair amount of ranging. Is this a bottoming out process? I wouldn't bet on it. If it is a bottoming out process, it'll probably take at least 2 or 3 years. Could the dollar during that phase go back down and test its lows and actually move a little bit lower? I think it's all but guaranteed. Will we see the dollar going into free fall? It's a risk, but that's a minority risk, pretty much a minority risk, not least because no government wants a strong currency in this environment, and it would suit no one. Who's going to be doing that particularly heavy selling? And then there's also the possibility, if we were seeing capitulation selling, heavy capitulation selling, or in some big speculative move to pushing the dollar down more rapidly, I feel we would see some multilateral intervention, but that may not be necessary. But my point is that I think the dollar is going to be in an overall ranging type of pattern at best. Now, at best means against which currencies can do that. At best, against the euro, might do a little bit better than that against sterling, a little bit worse than that against the Asian currencies, and the commodity currencies will almost certainly have another look at their highs, even though governments in those countries are trying to prevent renewed strength in their currencies. And that, of course, creates quite a favorable scenario for gold and the other precious metals. Now, this is investment demand that we're actually seeing, and the precious metals have been a momentum play recently, second only to the agricultural commodities. And I think people tend to buy gold for three reasons. They might buy it because the dollar is weak, but that has been increased to buying it just because it's appreciating against all currencies as a momentum play. They sometimes buy gold as an inflation hedge, and people can see the food and energy cost inflation around them. And as I say, they buy it, or I haven't said, but I'm about to say, they will buy gold because they're worried about global instability. So we've had a bit of a perfect storm here for gold, or a triple waterfall here, and I think that's going to continue for a while longer. And I therefore definitely expect this bull market to continue, and I'm quite happy with my precious metal investments overall. The ones I like least are the shares. They do have an element of gearing, but the costs are high, And all sorts of things can go wrong with the mining shares. And the metal is the pure, clean, and simple way to play it. The safest way to play the metal is, I think, in those bullion funds. I know you could have the bars, but what a palaver, and you're going to be charged for storage and so on. So there are these bullion type funds, and I know a lot of you hold those or have investments in those, and I would be totally relaxed about those positions. Some of you may deal in futures, as I do. I've taken to trading the silver a bit more actively recently, as you may have noticed. I lightened a little bit here today on the rally, and just by 16.6%, and just to range traded a little bit, something I did quite actively a number of years ago, and less so last year and the year before. But I expect all of these precious metals to move considerably higher. I've also said that I think most of the industrial metals will range higher as the year progresses, but that's they're likely to be a bit of a quiet affair here in the short term due to the global growth concerns over global growth. And foods probably take a bit of a breather in here, but very much within a bull market cycle. But they've run so hard and so fast, they've been everybody's conviction trade for quite some time, that I think indicates that we've seen the best of this move for a while, and there is a increased risk of a medium-term correction in here. I think also we have an increased risk of a medium-term correction in the crude oil price due to that steepening uptrend best seen on the weekly charts as it rallied up to that $100 level. And I think that's about it for another week. Well, one has to see the black humor in all this activity and to try to enjoy the challenge somewhat, to be able to deal with the stress that goes along with all this. Remember, we're our own best contrary indicators, so it's important to try to be quite objective about which side of our brain is getting the upper hand. We don't want to confuse our emotions. Those are those dark thoughts that we sometimes have pre-dawn. We don't want to confuse those with our own analytical brain, which some of you have been honing successfully for decades. And we want to try to, as I say, be very aware of that. And also, we need nice therapeutic relaxation that takes us completely away from the market. So I commend that to you. We have our own individual tastes in this. Some people are going to play golf. Some people will go for long runs. I will certainly have some gym time, and I've also got a wonderful London Philharmonic Orchestra concert tomorrow, and La Traviata at the Royal Opera House on Sunday. So those are nice diversions, and whatever you're doing, I hope you enjoy it at least as much as I'm going to enjoy my weekend. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.